Welcome to the Startup Dentist Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Trutter. After over 800 plus successful dental startups, I'm here to share everything I know about starting a profitable and purposeful dental practice with you. In each episode, we get right to the core of what it takes to launch and grow a successful dental practice. So whether you've just started researching dental startups or you've been sitting on the fence for a while, this podcast is your personal roadmap to your very own dental practice. Let's get into it.
Welcome back, Startup Dentist Podcast listeners. Super great to be back and super excited to share some great concepts and wisdom today on your startup journey. If you're an associate dentist and you are thinking about a startup, well, then you're listening. But here's the thing I want you to listen out to. My most recent episode, I interviewed and spoke with, and I think I just passed the mic to, her name is Dr. Arthi, and she opened up a practice in one of the most competitive areas in all the country and in New York. I'll tell you where she's at. And she talks on this most recent episode about building trust within a community. Now, most people probably think, like, New York, is there a community? Man, she's got it. So if you're thinking about, like, okay, I know I want to start up a practice, and if one of your biggest concerns is, how do I connect with my community? More importantly, how do I get patients in the door? You need to listen to this episode. I left that episode completely jacked up. I went into a vision call like immediately afterwards, and a couple of the team members, Mike and Charlene, and my team were like, how much coffee did you have this morning? And I said, my obligatory one cup. But I said, after speaking with Dr. Arthi, I just left with, like, wow, one of the greatest episodes I think I've ever been a part of, where she talked about this journey. She had some personal, you know, elements that she had to persevere through. You'll hear about her battle with breast cancer and things like that and building her practice. But more importantly, you'll hear a story about, like, how she's connected with her community, because she has built just one of the most successful startup practices I've been a part of, reaching new heights in terms of revenues. But more importantly, it's the following that she has. And she talks about, like, not a marketing gimmick, but really truly connecting with that person that's in the chair today, and how that one person went from to two people, that two went to four, and that four went to eight, and it just multiplied over a short period of time. And she's at a point now where she is just cranking after a very short time of having her startup practice with huge competition and zero insurances. That's not saying everybody should go fee for service. Her model, her vision align with that, but she's doing it so well. So you need to check out that most recent episode. Today, people talk about, like, hey, somebody asks, how do you do it? What does ideal practices do? And so today I want to talk about the 13 stages, but not from a, I'm not here to, that's cringy sales thing, but more, I'd rather provide you the complete tutorial on the proven system that has built some of the big success stories in all dentistry. And not only the stories I've shared on my website, through my book, through this podcast, but also more importantly, provide for you some of the most common pitfalls so that you can avoid those where so many just succumb to those and really struggle within their startup. So let's go. So go grab your notepad or your laptop, and let's make this dream practice of yours a living and breathing reality. All right, folks, people ask, what does ideal practices do? We have built a system. It's called the 13 stages. And today I want to take you through that tutorial. Again, if you read my book, The Startup Dentist, you know the graph. You've seen that 13 stage element. What goes into that? Well, now that I got you listening, I'll just say this. There's more than 13 stages of a true startup, because you kind of take that like an accordion. It's almost like one of those when you're a kid, if you're hot and you're in class, and you're like, oh, I'm going to do one of those fans where you took the paper and you like just fold it in on end, and then you fold it at the end and you had this little fan. So imagine like 13 stages then is condensed, and then now we're going to fan it out and say, whoa, there's a lot of elements that are in here. I have been doing this for over 20 years, and I'll tell you, like, I still see stories on Facebook of doctors that are struggling, and you don't have to. You don't have to go through the typical trial and error method of becoming a successful practice owner. You can fast track it. And today I want to talk to you about those 13 stages that we've guided and created some of the biggest success stories you have read about.
Hey there, Startup Dentist Podcast listeners. It's Stephen Trutter here, taking a quick break from today's episode to share something special with you. If you're dreaming of owning your own dental practice, then you need to get your hands on our Startup Dentist book. This isn't just any book. It's a 200-plus page comprehensive guide that covers everything you need to know to start a successful dental practice. From picking the perfect location to designing a patient-friendly office to building a marketing plan that draws in your ideal patients, we've got you covered. This book is packed with insider tips and real-world strategies.
So let's jump in here. So first off, what I want to do is I want to visit an overarching strategy that sums up our 13 stages. And you probably heard me talk about this on this podcast, and you'll read in my book. I call it the 3P methodology. And it's really practice, profits, and purpose. Now, with practice, what I like to talk about is the physical elements. Now, if you're listening, the first thing you don't want to do is go get a loan and go find space. That's what most people think. Like, I rush out, I find space, and I have funding. I have a practice. Oh, okay, sure. Yeah. You have the physical elements of a practice and the financial means, more than likely. But do you have a practice that's built upon to be able to get profits? And then more importantly, how do you connect within your community with a bigger purpose? So, you know, don't just focus on the opening of the doors. I think that's where most people do. It's like, I'm going to focus on opening the doors. How do I save money and things like that? I've talked ad nauseum about like focusing on growth strategies, not saving strategies. So practice is the physical element. We need to have those elements. There's a lot of pitfalls that can happen in the physical side of practice. Choosing the wrong location, the wrong demographics, the wrong real estate, having challenges in terms of equipment, construction, navigating permits. Yep, talk through all those elements here today. So practice, got to have that. Check that box. Number two element is what I call profits. This is where we talk about the systems. This is where some of the biggest blind spots for most associate dentists lie is, how do I have a practice that can be profitable? Now, it's not just about marketing strategies that are in there. Yes, that's one very big component of being able to have a practice with profits, but also it's about having the right team, the right systems, the right protocols to be able to build a practice and scale a practice over time. This is where a lot of that blind spot, maybe some of those muscle groups that you haven't exercised before. I got back from the gym today and it's like, you know, if you're going to train for a marathon, you're going to train differently than you would if you're going to be training for, you know, weightlifting competition, for example. Different muscle groups. Some of you probably are saying, I don't know the business of dentistry. Cool. Let's talk about the business of dentistry. You need to become more proficient and more confident. And I hope today I can give you some additional confidence in what are those elements that you need to get better at in terms of building a practice with profits. And that comes down to the systems in the business of dentistry. Number third element is purpose. If you listen to this most recent episode with Dr. Arthi, which will drop here really, really soon, then you'll hear her talking about purpose. And you've probably heard me talk about this a lot. If you read my book, I talk about the give process, and not just about giving within your community, but purpose is what separates good practices from great practices. Truly connecting as a human, not just as a dentist, one patient at a time to create something that not only you're proud of, but you love coming to work each day, serving your community, and creating an environment that is built upon trust, having the right team. And this is not just about how, but who. Who are the right who's that are in that environment? When you create a practice with purpose, it doesn't matter if a DSO comes in next door. I've had lots of clients, I've had DSOs come next door, other practice owners. They still thrive and grow despite other practices come in there because they've built a practice in their community that connects well with the patients. And they understand that you're treating them as humans, that it's not a financial transaction. When you can get to that stage and really focus on what is your biggest purpose? What is your bigger purpose? Why do you want to have this practice? What is your why? Then you'll be in that right mindset to say, now I am ready to become a practice owner because I have a practice that can become purposeful. So I would say the secret sauce that we always have is all of our practice owners, we talk about this big 3P methodology. And really this purpose is like, man, that is the big one. That's the big one that gets the practice owners from good practices to great practices because they're able to connect within their community and be able to have such great trust that they're building up that it snowballs. One patient talks to another patient and to another person that becomes a patient, and that just snowballs over time. So if you leave with anything today, and when I talk about like our course or Start a Practice Blueprint course, I always talk about this 3P methodology, and you'll see how these elements are going to fit into it. So the 13 stages looks like this. First thing we always talk about is your vision of a practice. And I think when it comes to vision, a lot of people think about like, what do I want the colors of my practice to be? What do I want the flooring to be? Yeah, you got the physical vision of the practice. But more importantly, what I like to think about is start to dial into what is the reputation that you desire within your practice? Even before your doors open, start to think through what that element is. Vision starts there, which is how do you want to be known within the community? What is that reputation that you desire to have as a practice owner? The other part is kind of a thinking forward of beginning with the end in mind. You know, someday a practice ownership will end. What did you leave behind? Some of our clients talk about like leaving behind a legacy for maybe a future practice owner to take over the practice. Some of our practice owners talk about mentorship, being able to maybe bring on other associates and really help continuing this positive cycle of private practice ownership. Hey, listen, DSOs aren't going to go away, but neither is private practice ownership. So create that environment. Something people talk about family as a part of this methodology of this future possible legacy. Others even talk about how they were thinking about their community, how maybe they can help their community beyond dentistry, help others in their practice achieve their goals. So it's a forward thinking process, which we like to say, begin with the end in mind. And then the last part of this vision is I talk about give in my book quite a bit. And if you don't know what Ideal Practices does, I'll share with you here. We have a partnership with an organization called Hope International. And when our practice owners open, we simultaneously make the funds available, kind of a 10x factor here, for 10 microloans in third world countries. Countries in Central Asia, Central Africa, Central America, some of the most poverty-stricken areas of the world where people can't have access to and don't have access to traditional funding. We have supported thousands of businesses in just worldwide. And if you think about thousands of businesses, how many thousands of people have they impacted positively in their communities? So what I love is like our company here at Ideal Practices gets to be able to support bigger missions. Okay, what does it relate to you? Some of our biggest success stories have things that they give back to, things that they support within their community. Now you're breaking down the walls of dentistry and discounts. Now you're connecting. This is the connection point to your community with your values. So maybe it's a non-for-profit. Maybe it's a personal interest. Pick up a copy of the book, The Startup Dentist, and you'll read some of those stories where some of them are sad, but some of them are just awesome stories of how they're able to connect within their community. Some have been able to create, you know, support women with makeovers. Maybe they're succumbed to spousal abuse and things like that. Some have had personal interest. You'll hear about Dr. Lauren, the mountain bike dentist, or the mountain climbing dentist. She's both. She's a mountain climbing wall in her reception area, something we designed, which is really appropriate for where she's located in Colorado, but she supports a local non-for-profit that helps with the development of mountain bike trails. But the cool thing is that her team shares this, and her entire community knows who she is, not just because of the great dentistry, but also because of what she genuinely and authentically wants to support. So vision needs to have elements that are in there that are not just about the physical elements, but more pre-planning who you're going to be, what you're going to leave behind, and what else can you support within that community that really connects to that community and supports them on a bigger level? When it comes to demographics, we like to roll into demographics and funding. And demographics is not just, you heard me before, I always say demographics is not about simply about ratios. Because if it would, nobody would want to start up a practice like where Dr. Arthi did in New York. The numbers didn't support it. It wasn't like 10% below. It was like, okay, Dr. Arthi, you know these demographics for New York are not going to look great. They're going to look bad. Okay, so now we need to have a marketing strategy. So, but with demographics, we're going to talk about multiple elements that are there. I think first off is thinking about some personal elements when it comes to demographics. Don't just look at a report and say, the report says the numbers are great. Too many companies do reports, but you've never seen demographics reports. Well, maybe you have. You don't know what it means. You don't mean that that's good for you. The other part, when I talk about like some personal elements of demographics, I read a post in one of the Facebook groups that we're a part of, and it was a doctor talking about like his story was kind of gut-wrenching. He said, I want to sell my practice because I basically live in a different town 4 or 5 days a week, and I go home on the weekends to see my family. This is where the demographics were good. Well, this is where I chose my practice location. Folks, Life is short. That's a sad living. So there needs to be some personal elements that need to be factored into your demographics, whether that's elements like how far do you want to travel, what lines with your family, schools, homes. Like, really think about that, because it's a lot easier to draw and surround your a happy personal life with a great business life. Don't have just one, have both. You can have both, by the way. And when people post things and it really gets on my nerves, go rural. Great. For doctors who want to be rural, go rural. We've had lots of clients have been rural. Our greatest success stories aren't all in rural communities. Yes, there's demand and things like that there. But if you don't want to be there, don't choose it because somebody that did it one time 25 years ago said rural was really good for them, unless you feel like that's a great opportunity for you. So desirable elements are going to be important. There needs to be great data that supports this. What are the trends within the marketplace when it comes to demographics? So we are going to let, you know, obviously ratios are great, but understand what's inside of those ratios. Look beyond the numbers. Who else is there? What is the competition that is there? Are these dentists that you're going to be nearby, are they serving the same kind of population? Are they doing the kind of procedure mix that you're doing? Are they targeting the same? Do they even market? I've looked at practice owners in areas and go, wow, if that dentist is there on Google Maps, there is zero, you know, marketing. A website that was built, you know, 20 years ago. Is this doctor really, truly going to be your competition? Maybe not. But there needs to be data. Data points also, like when we look at data points, we're looking at hundreds of different data points, including things like, you know, ratios. We're also looking at trends within the marketplace, housing elements. And then also within demographics, really define, like, who do you want to see? Don't go into a location and find yourself, you know, opening your doors and go, wow, numbers were great. I don't like my patients. We have a couple clients right now, like, this is not picking on them, that had bought practices in areas that really don't align clinically for them, nor is it kind of the patients that they truly connect with. And so we find startup locations for these clients to find the right ideal patient within that area. So demographics, not just about simply numbers, but personal elements. What are the trends within a marketplace? And also, well, who do you really want to see? So think about some of your most favorite patients. Let's go find an abundance of the area that aligns with that. Your funding, I just talked financing not too long ago, and I'll tell you this, funding is not just about getting a loan, it's aligning with the right financing partner. So as you're getting financing put together, really think about, like, line things with, like, where you're at with your student loans, making sure that your student loans are in a good place, have the lowest payment if you're on, like, IBR and things like that. The other thing is, in terms of funding, to get the best funding, a couple things need to happen. Number one, you need to have liquidity. You need to have somewhere between 5 and 10% of what you're going to borrow. What does that mean in today's environment? Somewhere between 30 and 40 to probably $70,000, $75,000, $80,000, give or take, in terms of liquid assets. The other thing about funding is you need to have a business plan. There's going to be certain elements that need to be in a business plan. Now, some lenders and some banking institutions don't require business plans, but you're building a business, right? Have a business plan. Tell your story. Talk about the opportunity. What are your upfront expenses? What are your projections? What's your budget? What are the demographics of the area? Tell the story to the bank. Because the fastest, easiest, with the best conditions, that path, that exists with the right bank, but also with a plan that you can put yourself on top of that list as opposed to the bottom. Prepare to have these conversations with lenders as well when it comes to the funding element that is there. So funding obviously needs to be, you need to check that box. Before you ever even start looking at real estate, you need to know, do you have a path for funding? Because once you get into real estate, it's really hard to kind of untangle that, especially if you find a space that you like. Don't want to put your name and sign anything until you have the proper funding in place. So demographics, funding, and real estate. So I'll talk about real estate here. Those three elements kind of like are some of the practice elements when I talk about those three P's, as well as construction elements and things like that. Real estate. You're driving around your town. You see the sign that says space for lease. Man, you want to call that sign. Don't do it. Unless you have transacted 100, I'll just put a really high number here. Unless you've done 100 commercial real estate leases in your career, don't call the sign. Because the second you call the sign, you're now involved in a transaction. You don't know it, but you are. If you're not properly represented, meaning you don't have a real estate agent that is represent you from a tenant representative perspective, you have put yourself already in a bad position. I call this the tale of two deals. You come in by yourself, here comes a piece of paper. here's the lease terms. You may, oh, those look great. Second, if you came in with a representative, somebody that knows, somebody that's representing you, you will probably get an entirely different transaction. Why? Because that landlord and that agent that's represent in that building, when you walk in by yourself, they know you haven't done this. What that means is they're going to give you something and say, let's see if they fall for this. You don't know what you're looking for, and you're not going to get a better deal. No matter what anybody says, you'll never get a better deal being by yourself whatsoever. Won't happen. You'll get a worse deal. You will be caught in a really bad situation. Real estate also probably provides, in terms of like all the steps of this entire process, I would say this, real estate has the most influence on your timeline. Some markets, it's a big challenge to find the right real estate. Now, leasing and purchasing, that's a whole nother rabbit hole. I always say this, if I can sum that up in one sentence, choose the location that is the best opportunity for your practice, not your portfolio. Worry about your portfolio later. Your investment today is your practice, not commercial real estate. So if you just say, I just want to purchase, you will limit yourself to the amount of potential opportunities that exist because there's going to be a bigger abundance in every marketplace. More leases will be available to you than there will be purchases. Then if you get to that next tier and say, well, I really need a purchase. Okay, great. Now you're limiting yourself to maybe a couple properties or properties in areas that aren't going to align in terms of the best demographics. That's not to say purchasing isn't a great path for people. I'm just saying don't prioritize the ownership over the opportunity for your practice. So maybe I summed that up in a few sentences. So real estate could be, you know, anywhere between a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 month process. In some cases, sometimes longer. It really depends on the marketplace. The other big thing is floor planning. Don't get free floor plans. Here's why. Free floor plans only come when you buy a certain amount of equipment. Anybody will give you something free. What's attached to that? Your floor plan needs to align with your vision. More importantly, it needs to give you control and freedom within that. Your floor plan is, there's a science to floor plans. There are certain areas. You'll read about it in my book, The Startup Dentist, where I talk about floor plans specifically with John, who's our floor plan designer. There's an art to it, but there's also a science. How do these things align? How does it align for your future growth? How does it align with like the productivity? A bad floor plan can constrict growth within a practice. If you think about distance and the zones of these different areas, whether it's the clinical zones, the administrative zones, you've got all the other different elements of your floor plan. These zones need to line up correctly so that you don't have a floor plan that is mismatched and you have bad distances, sight lines, and elements like that. Next thing you know, it's like you're bumping into people. There's just too far of distances. Now, if you think about how those elements and how the flow of a patient would go within your practice, if you're losing minutes per patient based upon a bad floor plan, those minutes add up to big dollars over the course of a career. Your floor plan needs to reflect your vision and give you control within those elements and avoid free floor plans. Equipment construction and technology. All right, equipment. It's a big topic. But when you start talking about equipment, you really want to make sure that you have somebody that understands what you need, not what they want to sell you. This is one of the biggest line items. Equipment and construction are the two largest line items when it comes to your budget. With equipment, I always say if you think about choosing equipment, think about it in terms of like purchasing a car. And what I mean by that is, there are like levels and tiers of cars. Maybe you've got your budget friendly cars that are, you know, your Toyota Corollas. All right. Budget friendly, no frills, you know, nice car, probably run a long time, but a lot of plastic parts. I would say like your mid tier, you're starting to get into maybe some nicer, maybe not luxury, but like nicer vehicles. Those might be cars like maybe, you know, a Lexus or, you know, an Infiniti or something like that, leather and things like that within it. And then you get your high-end cars. Now you're looking at, you know, like your Porsches and things like that. So if you think about like equipment in that tier, where do you land within that tier? I'm not a big fan of like buying the cheapest equipment. I think choosing equipment, think about your patient as well. Think about what you're delivering. Think about your marketplace. A higher-end community, do you probably want to aim towards more comfort chairs? Yes. The other element is if you're a pediatric dentist, you don't need high-end chairs and things like that. So think about your patients. Budget obviously is one thing, but the other big thing is your physical structure, ergonomics. you live in a 9x11 room, or however big your treatment rooms are going to be, think about your ergonomics and how that fit. So I would test drive a lot of equipment, like you would test drive a car. How does that fit within your ergonomics? The other thing is, when it comes to equipment, you don't need to equip all your rooms and things like that, plumb all your rooms, things like that. You may be starting off with somewhere between 2 and 4 rooms to start off with, depending on your budget, clinical, the amount of patients and things like that that are there. 2 to 4 rooms is a really, really great starting point. Used equipment, I don't love used. I like if you can find elements that could be used as somebody else's stuff. You know, it's like, hey, here's a used pan. Okay, who's going to install it? Do I get a warranty and things like that? I think there's a refurbished area that's out there, especially for some of the high-tech elements. I think refurbished is a good place. But keep in mind, when it comes to refurbished, you need to make sure that someone's going to install it and it comes with a warranty. That's what happens with refurbished. I think it's a really great way to hybrid kind of your equipment purchases, where more than likely your chairs and some of those elements, your delivery units, are new, installed by, you know your distributors and things like that. And I think some of your tech elements, whether it's imaging, things like that, you can find a lot of great places that are out there that are in this world that provide really great refurbished, saves a lot on your budget, gets you the technology that you need, and more importantly, comes with the installation and the warranty. That's a big thing. So I would avoid the used market, simply because if it breaks down, you got a big problem, especially when it comes to mechanical elements. Construction, really make sure that you have a contractor that understands your world when it comes to dental construction. Now, you can fall outside those lines. I worked with I've had clients in certain markets where there aren't dental specific contractors that are there, because it's just not a big enough marketplace to be able to feed a contractor all, you know, just there's not enough dental transactions and dentists and dental practices opening up. But I think when it comes to construction, you want to make sure that you guard yourself. Couple things, timelines. What is the permitting process going to be? Permit times have increased in a lot of different marketplaces. So you need to understand what is the permit time that is there, your construction. You want to make sure contracts, things like that. What is your warranty? And the things called change orders. All right. When you walk into your job site and you start telling the contractor, yeah, I'd like to change that. Yeah, I'd like to change this. Yeah, I'd like to do those things. Don't do it verbally. Get everything in writing. Because the last thing you want to do is contractor hands you a final bill at the end and says, hey, here's your final bill. And all of a sudden you look down and go, well, I have like $30,000. This is $30,000 or $40,000 more than my original quote. Oh, yeah. Remember those couple times you're on site and you said you want to change all those things? Yeah, those are those change elements. Yeah, those are called change orders. Don't have change orders unless you authorize them and it's in writing. And that's where I say you're on your site and you're talking to your contractor. You'll be on site, obviously, in your construction. Really take note of like, what are those costs that are there, and making sure that it is in writing, and tell the contractor, I will not approve anything without these elements in writing. Because you don't know how much something may cost. It may seem small and minuscule, but it could also think about like changing one element changes all these different elements in terms of the construction itself. So really guard yourself when it comes to the construction element. Timeline typically for most construction, once they start construction, most contractors, you know, about 100 days, maybe 120 days, the permit time. In some areas of the country, having a permit expediter is a really great investment to be able to expedite that. Permit times, construction, all those things. Going back to real estate, your free rent, if you're into a lease, for example, you need to understand from your contractor, what does permitting look like? What is it and what is the timeline in order to get my mechanical plans and all those things drawn up? Because you do want to factor that into, if you have the chance of building in more free rent on the front end, you want to factor those elements into your free rent when it comes to your lease. Really very, very big, important piece of the real estate negotiations. Technology, again, it's a part of those elements, your physical technology that needs to be in there. And then once you get through the permitting phase, and that could be, you know, every market is different. So I don't even want to quote you like how long permitting can take. I've been in states that it's taken a year. Hawaii takes about over a year to get permits. That's the anomaly of getting permitting. Sometimes it could be weeks, sometimes it could be a couple months. And you need to make sure that you have a contractor and a team that's monitoring what's happening. And as you get information back, whether that's feedback from the permitting department and things like that, to make sure you know where that permitting is. Once construction begins, then if you kind of think about this as you climb the mountain, it's like, all right, I've got my demographics. I found my space. I've got my funding. I got my floor plan. I climb this mountain, I've secured my real estate, and my construction begins. Oh, I'm at the top. All right, Mount Everest is 29,000 plus feet. You got to get down 29,000 feet. Now we start to get into the business of dentistry. In our world, we call it the Startup MBA. A lot of different elements that are inside of this element of what we call the Startup MBA. But really, it's going to talk about like the marketing. So you need to start building out your marketing strategy. Now, you're not going to launch marketing until about 2 to 3 weeks prior to opening. So your sweet spot is about 3 weeks to start dropping your marketing about 3 weeks before you open your doors. But you're building that strategy. Your marketing needs to have a few different elements that are there. I always recommend having a great agency that can do things like foundational elements of marketing. Things like your website, if you're going to do any kind of like meta ads or Google ads and things like that to monitor those elements, probably even your branding, logo development, and things like that. An agency is not marketing. I see so many people post on Facebook like, who's ever using for marketing? A month later, that same doctor's like, who's ever using for marketing? And it's like, I see people jump around with marketing agencies. Keep in mind, who you work with in the beginning may not be the same agency that you work with forever. But an agency is not the solution for marketing. They're a part of the solution. Everyone thinks like, I need to hire. Once I hire a company, I'm going to sit back and just see all the patients roll through. No way. Your ground marketing, your community efforts are going to drive those first. We always say your first 100 patients need to come through your own efforts. An agency takes time to build up what's going to work. What are the right keywords that are going to be able to connect within the community. It could be 30, usually I say 60, 90 days of a runway for an agency to really get all those other elements behind the scenes to start like kind of building up your SEO and things like that. It takes time. So it's like, what are your elements that you're going to do to drive patients into your practice? Not physically drive, but it's connecting with your community. It's connecting with local businesses. It's connecting with groups that, you know, connected. Now, when you go and you're connecting with your community, be a human, not a dentist. Don't just go in there saying, I'm trying to get patients. Connect with them on a human level. You're connecting with them as people. Hey, I am opening a practice. Hey, what can I do to help your business? Hey, what are things within the community? Really, I call it creating chemistry with people, because those people long-term, and keep in mind, just because you meet a person one day and they're like, well, I met that one person, and it didn't work. I'll say this. Marketing is about touches. It may take even a potential patient hitting them and having them, attracting them into your practice may take multiple touches. It may be this ad. It might be this post. It might be this connection point. One time and it fails doesn't mean it failed. One time is just that one time effort. Some cases it may take 4 to 7 touches before a person becomes a patient. It may take 4 to 7 times of connecting with people in the community before you really start to build that community trust as who you are within the community. And over time, it's like, hey, I have a friend of mine that's moving to the area. Hey, I have another business owner. Wow, their team could really use a good dentist. You may have great business connections within the community. So your marketing is not just about tactics. It's about a strategy of having some people, an agency, do part of it. Your ground marketing, and then now we're going to wrap in that give. That is the value proposition. That is the element that you're saying, hey, I'm Dr. So-and-so. I'm opening my practice over here. Can I tell you what my practice is supporting? It could be a local cause that serves your community. It could be a local foundation, a non-for-profit, a personal interest that just says, they know who you are. It's not just about your margins. No one's going to remember how great your margins are, because guess what? They're probably all great. You probably have great margins, but no one's going to remember you and say, wow, that's a dentist with the greatest margins. No, they're going to say, that's a dentist that does that thing. Maybe it's something you do every year with your team. Maybe it's like a big event that you even do with your give partner, things like that. Dr. Brian, my book, you talk about that every year. He has this big, almost like a small festival with a next door business of his. And they talk about like supporting their give, and they bring this give, and they bring the people that this give serves within their community. And their team is a part of this whole big thing. And everybody knows like this thing happens once a year and more people come to it. Just a really great community outreach. Within this element of the business, hone in your leadership skills, hiring processes. Okay, hiring, choosing the right team. Boy, that's tough, but you could do it. And I think one of the big things is you want to share your vision or your vision statement and your mission statement with potential hires. Talk to them about like how you want your practice to be known within the community. You're going to find by sharing that vision with potential hires, you're going to find people who go, man, I've been working for so-and-so. I've been working for this corporate dental practice. I've been working for Dr. So-and-so. I never heard this before. We hear those stories on a daily basis because it's pre-planned. You'll find the right people that want to be a part of your mission simply because they're attracted to connecting with people. You're treating patients in a different way. You're describing them how you want patients to be treated. And you're going to find people that weren't looking for jobs. They were looking for a career path. And you're attracting them, not because you'll be able to pay them the most, because as a startup, you probably won't. So you want to find the right people that say, yeah, I want to be a part of what you're doing. And that's how you choose the right people. Now, it's going to take time. You know, there's a lot of different channels of hiring people, online searches and things like that. But one of the big things of finding that right team is sharing this mission with them of help be a part of this. You're not just a boss. You're becoming a leader. And a leader is showing them how you want things done. A boss just tells people how to do things. You probably work for bosses now. And bosses just simply tell people, go do this. This is how you should do this. As opposed to, let me show you how to do this. Leading by example. Insurances, financial guidelines, all these different elements are part of this 13-stage process. So I talk about like navigating insurances. Our insurance team, they are awesome. Credentialing, understanding your fee schedules. There is a process for this. It's about, you know, in our world, 3 to 4 months of like the insurance element, but really understanding what are the right insurances. Maybe you are going to go fee for service or be out of network. Okay. You know, that's a whole podcast episode. I could talk about that. But when it comes to, if you're picking up PPOs, we always say like, what are the best ones within your community that align with your ideal patients and things like that? You know, those are kind of the elements that need to be there. You know, some credentialing companies are going to say 6 to 8 months and things like that. That's why you always start that process early. Our world's about 4-ish months just because of all the connections that we have behind the scenes in terms of some of the biggest carriers that are out there. For those that are going to go out of network and or fee for service, I don't recommend it for most. I think it aligns for very few. I think it depends on your clinical mix, the patients that you're going to serve and the community where you're located. I get it. Insurances, nobody loves them. But most patients are trained to ask one question. Are you a network with my insurances? So you need to be able to have a script and be able to handle those elements if you're going to be out of network or fee for service. If you're out of network or fee for service in most marketplaces, your growth trajectory typically is going to be a little bit slower as you build up that patient. So for those that say that's in a predominantly like, you know, blue collar suburban area, for those that want to go fee for service, you know, that's a little bit of a tougher path, especially when everybody else does that. That's not to say you can't do it, but I'm a big fan of lowering the barrier of entry. I get it. Most people, you know, a lot of people say, I want to go fee for service or a network just because I want to provide a different experience to the patient that is not rooted or based upon the benefits that come from an insurance company. Totally understand, and I'm totally with you. But if nobody comes in, you can't provide a better experience. So lower the barrier of entry in the beginning. So many of our clients over the first couple of years start to drop those insurances, even some of the big players, over time as they build trust within the community, because fee-for-service and out-of-network in most areas is a trust factor. And if you have like a really great referring channel that exists, especially if it's, you know, if you're a specialist and things like that, then, you know, out-of-network and fee-for-service is that. So today I'm not saying what is the best path. I'm just simply saying there are a lot of factors when it comes to how to choose that. And it's really a lot of different personal elements, community, your marketplace that really will provide more clarity on which path is going to be the best for you. Marketing and all these different elements are happening behind the scenes. You're going to be during this time of construction, you're not just going to be sitting around thinking, you're going to be developing your leadership. You're going to be hiring your team. You're going to be developing your financial guidelines. You're going to be developing your employee handbook. Yes, it's legal in nature, so you want to make sure you have an employee handbook. You're going to be developing your patient experience. Like, great, when they come in, what happened? Is there a tour of their practice? What happens that goes here? You're going to be ordering supplies. You're going to be making final decisions in construction. Your equipment is going to be installed about, you know, a week or two before you open your doors. You're making some final decisions. within those elements. The other elements when it comes to business is your payroll elements. Once you bring on your team, about 30 days before you open your doors is when your payroll is going to start within that framework and within that timeline. And then about 3 weeks before you open your doors, you've been working on your marketing. Now your marketing is going to drop. So website goes live. If you're doing Google Ads, Meta Ads, those things are going to start to drop 2 to 3 weeks prior to that. But what you're going to be focusing on is, I like to call this not only your community outreach, but also who's your VIP list? Stacy on her team, Stacy Peters, you probably have seen her on a podcast or heard her on a podcast. She's our director of the Startup MBA. She was telling a story of a client and she was getting a little bit worried. She said, okay, she's going to be opening up her doors soon in about 30-ish days. And she said, she was talking to her about her VIP list, which is like family, friends, connections she's made within the community, things like that. And we always say, get a VIP list that is as robust as possible. Get those first 50 to 100 people that could be on that VIP list that you call and say, I'm opening. Hey, you're invited here as those first patients that you're going to call. And about 30 days ago, and she had like 2 people on it. We're like, whoa, this is not going to be good. And we said, okay, great. Time to buckle down. Let's focus on these elements. And then I was talking to Stacey just the other day, and she asked her, Doc, where's your VIP list? She says, here you go, 200 people, 200 names, those first 200. So you want to launch a practice, not just have like think about a cannonball that launches. You just don't want a cannonball that kind of dribbles out the cannon itself. You want to launch as a practice, focusing on those ground marketing efforts to truly launch. Because failure to launch is a thing. And when you have a brand new team, there's nothing better than having patients through the door from day one. It just builds that confidence, the confidence they have in you because they came on board to you. It also builds your confidence early on. And for so many that do start off slow, this is an area where a lot of you are like, oh, I just don't know how to make the perfect post. It's action above perfection, folks. Take action. There's no perfect post if you're going down social media. There's no perfect connection with somebody. And I'll even say more connections with the community. Be a human. Shake hands. Truly make personal connections. Over time, those will just continue to build upon themselves. And that reputation grows over time. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I get it. Never done this before. But you need to be out in the field. Yeah, but Steven, I'm an introvert. I don't care. You don't have to be the most extroverted person. I'm not. My wife and I went to a party over some friend's house the other night, and it was about an hour and a half in. I'm like, I've eaten. I want to go home. I want to sit on my own sofa. I want to chill. Had enough social time. I'm good. But turn on that switch. You don't have to be completely extroverted, but think about the people that sit down in the chair in front of you. You make a personal connection every day with patients. Go out within your community, connect with other businesses. All right, so here we are. We're kind of come full circle. You've got your vision, your demographics, funding, real estate, floor plans, your equipment, construction, technology. All those elements are lined up. Your permitting's in place. You secure your real estate. Your construction begins. Start working on all the business systems, your leadership, your protocols, your financial guidelines. You're making final decisions. Your equipment gets installed. Your marketing's dropped. And now, don't open your doors as soon as you get your certificate of occupancy. So this is a document that you'll get from a contractor that says you can occupy the space. I get it. You may have been waiting a year, 2, maybe 3 years, you know, to actually open your doors. Maybe not throughout this entire process, but like maybe you've been waiting for years to open your doors. What I always say is take a couple of weeks even after you get your certificate of occupancy. We have some time where it's like we have to have these tough conversations. Say, I know it. You've waited this long. What's another couple weeks to be properly ready? You're making a 2 to 3 decade decision here, folks. Don't rush it. Those couple weeks after you get that certificate of occupancy or CO, work with your team on the training. Work the implementation of the guidelines, the implementation and review of the handbook, implementation of the financial elements within your practice, the implementation of all these different elements, as well as things like ordering supplies, getting things, you know, physically straightened within the practice. Take those couple weeks, take a deep breath, get all these things in place. And then what we always have, we have a dress rehearsal where we come in, we have you bring in a patient, or not a troop, not not a not a patient to work on that day, but a patient to walk through, kind of like a dry run. This is the dress rehearsal before the big day, your big opening day. And then have that dress rehearsal, you know, in that, you know, those first couple those weeks leading up to your opening. So after your certificate of occupancy, have like a full day where we come in with your, this is how we do it. We come in, advisor works with you and your entire team, all the elements that you're working on, implementation day. Take a patient or a friend that can come in and act as a patient through this new patient experience that you developed. Make sure everybody's ready for that day that you open your doors, because what we want and what you want is this. That first patient walks through the door, they never even knew that they were the first patient. Give them some flowers, give them something special. They'll never know because you have a system. You had a plan so that everything is a well-oiled machine for that first patient. And last but not least, have your grand opening. Now, most people, what I always recommend is like have the party like a month after like you actually open your doors. So it's a lot to like plan your practice for months and months or a year or more to get open. And then like, no, I need to plan this huge party. I always recommend get your doors open, have a grand, and then celebrate your grand opening, you know, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, maybe a month or two after you actually open yours, where you actually then put together, have some time, have team members help build out the strategy of having a grand opening, connect with people like community leaders, whether it's like your local, like maybe you're part of your Rotary or Chamber of Commerce. We always have like, we have a lot of clients that'll have like their local chamber president come in and cut the ribbon. Do that after you actually open yours. Be open for a month or so, let the dust settle, start seeing patients, work through that. And during that time, plan out this gathering, have vendors, have community people that you've connected with. Have them invite, have your give partner there, have all this big thing, and then truly celebrate because you're open, you're already seeing patients, and share this journey with your family, with your friends, with the community that you serve. And super excited I get to share this with you. So can't wait to see each and one, every one of you today. I hope this gives you a framework for the 13 stages of opening your practice, and so that you can get ready for that day that you have your grand opening. And that you celebrate freedom, freedom for being your own practice owner and the control that you have, and that you have something that you can build for maybe multiple generations. So hope that helps. If you want to learn more about our 13 stages, couple paths you can go. Pick up a copy of my book, The Startup Dentist, at thestartupdentistbook.com, or join us at our next upcoming course, The Startup Practice Blueprint, that is at startuppracticeblueprint.com. We have these courses twice a year where we have usually 2 to 3 dozen associate dentists like yourself that come in, where we talk about this entire, we take this entire process and lay it out over 2 full days with not only our team, but other industry experts that talk about legal elements and marketing elements there. So check that out. That's a wrap on the 13 stages of a startup. Hope this gave you some great insight. Again, I'll leave you with this. Don't just focus on the opening, practice profits and purpose. Think about what is that bigger purpose. And that will be the right path for you. That will be your guiding light for the future practice that you'll love to own. Don't forget to check the show notes for any and all links and resources that we talked about today. And next time, I'm going to talk about some legal elements that you need to prepare for before you open your doors. So I'll see you there.
As we wrap up this episode, take a moment to picture yourself a year from now. Are you still in your associateship? Are you rocking it at your own dental practice, creating beautiful smiles and making a real difference? If that's the dream, it's time to chase it. Before we split, make sure to hit subscribe, drop a review, and give us your rating. It helps us keep bringing you the good stuff that you're into. Until we meet again, keep taking that next step towards your future practice. Here's to investing in your dreams and making them a reality.